You're listening to the Body Pros podcast coverage of AIDS 2008, the 17th International AIDS Conference. The conference took place in Mexico City from August 3rd through August 8th, 2008.
Thank you very much. Castleman's disease is a rare lymphoproliferative disorder that was first described about 50 years ago by Benjamin Castleman, who was the pathologist at Massachusetts General Hospital. And in fact, the first report of Castleman's disease appeared as a case record in the New England Journal of Medicine, you know, that bit in the middle where they have very difficult diagnoses that you can never work out. And anyway, clearly nobody could have guessed that it was an entirely new illness. These are the images from that first ever case, which was a woman with a mediastinal mass and in fact had unicentric and hyaline vascular variation of Castleman's disease. Since that time, the same disease has been called loads of different things, which makes it rather difficult to follow the literature. But increasingly, it's now been honed down and focused on using the term Castleman's disease, which makes things a little bit easier. There are, in fact, four forms of Castleman's disease. There are anatomical differences. They can either be localized or multicentric. And there are histological differences. It can either be hyaline vascular or plasmablastic. As far as people with HIV is concerned, they tend to get plasmablastic multicentric Castleman's disease rather than any of the other variants. And that's pretty much the focus of the rest of this talk. Histologically, the only way to make the diagnosis of Castleman's disease currently is by histology. And down the microscope, the lymph nodes or the spleen have these hyperplastic follicles with expanded mantle zones in between them. And this, as far as histopathologists are concerned, is rather attractive, apparently, onion skin arrangement of mantle cell zones. And those cells in that onion skin whorl around a central vessel are in fact monotypic but polyclonal plasmablasts. That's to say that they're not all from the same origin, like a monoclonal proliferation, but they for some reason have light chain restriction. Now, it's not clear why they are IgM lambda light chain restricted, but it's quite helpful in establishing the diagnosis histologically. And those very light chain restricted plasmablasts are infected with human herpes virus 8. That's the same virus as Kaposi's sarcoma herpes virus. They're synonymous names for the same virus. So this is the same virus that's associated with the development of Kaposi's sarcoma. As far as the incidence information that I've got for you, this is based from the Chelsea and Westminster cohort, which includes nearly 11,000 HIV seropositive patients, followed for over 50,000 patient years between 1983 and 2007, prospectively. And first of all, what about just the overall incidence? We've compared here the incidence of Castleman's disease and the incidence of Kaposi's sarcoma in the same cohort, because they're both caused by the same virus. So there were over 1,000 cases of Kaposi's sarcoma in our cohort, but only 24 cases of Castleman's disease, with an incidence about 1/50th that of Kaposi's sarcoma in the whole cohort population. We then looked in initially univariate and then multivariate analysis, but I'm not going to bore you too much with the statistics, partly because I don't understand them terribly well. But the first thing to note is that the risk of developing Kaposi's sarcoma, of course, as you know, is much greater in men and is much greater if you had a prior AIDS diagnosis. However, this was not the case for Castleman's disease. There was no gender preference for developing Castleman's disease, and similarly, you weren't more likely to develop Castleman's disease if you'd had a prior AIDS defining diagnosis. The factors that were associated with an increased risk of developing Castleman's disease included increasing age. The older you were, the more likely you were to develop Castleman's disease. Being non-Caucasian in terms of your ethnicity, so that the risk was higher, particularly in black African members of our cohort. The shorter the interval between being known to be HIV positive and the event, was increase the risk of Castleman. So in fact, this seems to be an issue that occurs relatively early in the sequence of HIV infection. It's not a late event, as you'd expect for Kaposi sarcoma, for example. It's a relatively early event in terms of timing relative to your seroconversion. Similarly, it's associated with higher rather than lower nadir CD4 cell counts, quite the opposite from most HIV-related malignancies. And the final point is that HART does seem to protect against the development of Castleman's disease by reducing the risk of Castleman's disease. So here, this is just comparing again the risk of Castleman's disease and Kaposi sarcoma by nadir CD4 counts. You're all very familiar with the fact that the risk of Kaposi sarcoma rises as the CD4 count falls, and that's basically the same data shown in our particular cohort. You'll notice that on the y-axis is a log scale. However, quite the opposite for multicentric Castleman's disease. You can see there is no increase in the risk of developing Castleman's disease as your CD4 count falls. What we have noticed in the cohort is that the incidence of multicentric Castleman's disease appears to be rising in different calendar periods. So we've split it into three calendar time periods: the pre-HART era from 1983, when the cohort was established, to 1996, when HART became widely available to members of the cohort. And we've then divided the post-HART era into early HART era up to 2001 and the true post-HART era of 2002 to 2007, when basically the criteria for starting HART were pretty much similar to those currently. And during those three different calendar periods, you can see that the incidence of Castleman's disease has progressively risen. There may, of course, be some diagnostic ascertainment bias within that. Maybe we're more familiar with the diagnosis and more likely to make the diagnosis and search for it a bit harder. But nonetheless, there does appear to be a rising incidence of Castleman's disease. And that's, again, completely different to the issue within our cohort for Kaposi sarcoma, which is progressively declining in incidence, particularly a large decline from the pre-HART era to the HART era, and perhaps some modest further decline in the between the early and the late post-HART eras. But in complete contrast, multicentric Castleman's disease incident appears to be rising in those three calendar periods, a diagnosis that we're going to be making more frequently, in other words. As I mentioned, the diagnosis is very difficult to make. The clinical and pathological features of Castleman's disease overlap with a large number of other illnesses in people who are HIV positive. And the only real way of establishing the diagnosis is undertaking a biopsy. However, increasingly, there are other criteria that may help in establishing the diagnosis and pushing you towards undertaking a biopsy. And in particular, by measuring the amount of Kaposi sarcoma herpes virus in free in the plasma, just like an HIV viral load, you can measure the HHV8 in the viremia. And as you can see from this study, we did quantitative PCRs looking for HHV8 viral loads in the plasma of 240 HIV-positive patients, and the vast majority of patients with Castleman's disease had a positive HHV8 viral load at the time of their active Castleman's disease, whereas the majority of other HIV patients with other diagnoses had undetectable HHV8 in their blood. Patients with Kaposi sarcoma fitted in, stuck somewhere in the middle, with about a third of those patients having detectable HHV8 viremia in their plasma. But if we look a little bit further at the value of the quantitative nature of this assay, you can see that patients with Kaposi sarcoma who had a positive HHV8 had far lower viral loads of HHV8 than patients with multicentric Castleman's disease. Now, as yet, this is an insufficient assay to make the diagnosis of Castleman's disease, but certainly seems to help push towards undertaking a biopsy. And there's some further data that I haven't got or presented for you today, suggesting that using the HHV8 viral load can be a helpful marker of disease activity, and it'll go down when the disease goes into remission and rises again when the disease relapses. I just thought I'd very, very briefly in the last couple of slides tell you about the management experience that we have of Castleman's disease using a combination of rituximab with etoposide and splenectomy where necessary. And the overall outcome for patients in the current era with Castleman's disease suggests that a 5-year survival of 67% can be achieved in this way. So my final conclusion slide is just to remind you that it does appear that the incidence of multicentric Castleman's disease is rising, that unlike Kaposi's sarcoma, the risk of Castleman's is not associated with a degree of immunosuppression, that the plasma HHV8 viral load can be used as a useful diagnostic marker and probably an ongoing tumour marker for multicentric Castleman's disease, and that with aggressive combination of chemotherapy, immunotherapy and splenectomy surgery where necessary, a 5-year survival of 67% can be achieved for these patients with HIV-associated multicentric Castleman's disease. Thank you very much. If you like, I'll answer some questions.
Thank you very much. That was a great presentation on a much neglected disease in AIDS, I think. But is there not some literature about use of ganciclovir in this disease? I certainly have had a patient in remission for a long time on which I attributed oral ganciclovir as being the reason.
You're absolutely right that there are, unlike Kaposi's sarcoma, the HHV8 in multicentric Castleman's is reproducing, you know, it's replicating. So there are a number of strategies that have been attempted using antivirals as a treatment for Castleman's disease. There is a small, very small series on ganciclovir being an effective treatment, but increasingly people are considering the use of valganciclovir, particularly as maintenance after achieving remission. And there's a large study going on, I believe, in Seattle, which I think is somewhere in America, that is being used for maintaining remission of Castleman's disease.
I'm Dr. Sood from Dudley, Birmingham. My question is that if you have Castleman's disease, is it more in favor of AIDS diagnosis, or should it be included as an AIDS-defining illness?
My personal view about what illnesses should be included, and particularly what cancers should be included as AIDS-defining illnesses, is that they should be, as the original reason for using AIDS-defining illnesses, a surrogate of advanced immunosuppression. They should kind of designate that your immune system's pretty vulnerable, and of course they should be an indication for commencing ARVs if you're not already on antiretrovirals. The fact that Castleman's disease is unassociated with your CD4 count, and many of our patients have got CD4 counts above the level at which in the UK we would initiate therapy of 350. You know, about a third of our patients presenting with Castleman's disease have higher CD4 counts than that. So I don't think Castleman's disease should be an AIDS-defining diagnosis, personally.
My name is Heiko Rosaris from Germany, Berlin. I know that in Japan, antibody against interleukin-6 is approved for Castleman's disease, and Roche didn't develop it, I think, for Europe. Do we have any explanation for this, or do we have any suggestion for the next step for this drug?
So the antibody is against interleukin-6 receptor. Now, interleukin-6 levels are very high in the majority of people with Castleman's disease, and indeed many of the symptoms of Castleman's disease may be attributed to the high levels of interleukin-6. So in theory, blocking the receptor blocks that And that's the proposed mechanism. The drug has been developed, as you say, in Japan, and the use in Japan is exclusively on HIV-negative patients with either unicentric or multicentric Hodgkin's disease. The experience of using this drug in patients with HIV is extremely limited. We have actually used it in one patient back about 8 years ago, but unfortunately, fortunately, the guy got much better, returned to his native Zambia, where he subsequently died, and the drug company got very irate with us because we couldn't tell them whether or not he had active Castleman's at the time at which he died, and refused ever to give us any of that agent again. At that time, it wasn't Roche, I have to say, but I can't even remember the name of who it was, so that's probably a good thing. Okay, I think that these things are all flashing, so I need to stop there, if that's all right.
The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebodypro.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us.
This has been a report on the 17th International AIDS Conference from The Body Pro. For more podcasts and full coverage of this conference, visit us online at thebodypro.com/AIDS2008.